Production support for Soundbites is made possible by listeners and by Coffee by Design, growing a business committed to community and sustainability locally and worldwide. CoffeeByDesign.com.
Welcome to Soundbites, true stories told by local Mainers and nationally recognized storytellers. The themes are always changing, and the hosts are from all over the nation, but when you hear the name Soundbites, you're in for a unique storytelling experience. Soundbites is brought to you by Frontier Studios and made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing Company, Frontier, The Press Hotel, Toad & Co., and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. This week's stories were told live at Frontier in Brunswick, where the event's dedicated theme was Wanted. Here's today's host, Connecticut-based novelist, storyteller, columnist, playwright, and teacher, Matthew Dix.
I tell my best friend, Benji, that I think Karen likes me. And he blinks, and then he smiles, and then he starts to laugh at me. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Our party has finally come to an end. Everyone who was wasted is now sprawled out on couches and in sleeping bags all over the apartment. Anyone who is sober has blessedly gone home, and a small contingent of the faithful are sitting in the living room, basking in the glow of a black and white television set atop an old baby changing table. They're watching Monty Python and the Holy Grail for the 1,000th time. And I would be sitting with them normally, watching this show and loving every minute of it, but I'm in the kitchen with Benji. We're trying to get a head start. We live about 10 minutes away from Foxborough Stadium, where the Patriots play, and it's Sunday tomorrow. We're going to the football game, so we're trying to clean up. We're stacking cans and bottles, except now we're not doing any of that because Benji is laughing at me. And I know why he's laughing at me. Girls like Karen do not like boys like Matthew Dix. Karen is the most beautiful woman in every room that she enters. She is stunning. So the thought that I might have captured her attention is kind of impossible. Except there were signs tonight that it really might be. Every time I said something funny at the party, I would turn and Karen was right there laughing at what I said. And we were playing three-man, a drinking game, and at one point she sort of toppled off her chair and she reached and grabbed my thigh to steady herself. And I swear her hand remained there a fraction of a second longer than it needed to. And when she left at the end of the night, she said goodbye, which sounds normal, but we're all 19. Nobody says goodbye to anybody. We just stumble off into the night and see each other 3 days later. But she made an attempt to find me. And so now I think maybe she likes me. And I can't believe it. Karen is not a girl who I would ever chase after. Actually, no man chases after Karen. Karen is like a bug light. She draws you in close and then she stabs you in the heart. But I really think she might like me. And he continues to laugh as we pack up the kitchen and get ready for the game. 2 days later, the phone rings, and when I pick it up, it's Karen. She wants to know when our next party is, and I tell her Saturday night, and she says four of the most beautiful words I have ever heard in my life. That's not soon enough. And so I say, how about Thursday? We'll eat pizza and watch a movie together, and she says, great. And I hang up the phone, and at first I can't believe it, and then I realize that there's a problem. I don't know if she really called for me. It's 1992. We don't walk around with our own phones. There's just a phone stuck on the wall. And this phone applies to like six guys at any one time. I might have just been the idiot who picked it up. She said she wanted to come over and hang out, but that doesn't really mean she wants to hang out with me. And I need to know if Karen is coming over for me or for any one of the other much better looking men that live in this house. And so I make a plan. When Thursday rolls around, there's a knock on the door, and when I open it, Karen is standing there, and right away I know she's not here for me because she's just too beautiful to be here for me. But I have a plan, and I'm going to go through with it. I've rearranged the living room furniture. We have this enormous sectional, and I have turned it so it is now facing the stairs instead of the TV. And I've taken all the other chairs and turned them away from the TV. It looks completely ridiculous. And I've taken these two love seats that we have, and I've put them right in front of the TV. There's a small love seat that will fit two people, but you're going to be really cozy if you choose that one. And then there's a larger love seat that two people can sit in, and there'll be plenty of space in between us. And I have set this up to determine if Karen is here for me. So, as the movie is getting started, I grab the pizza and I ask Karen to go into the kitchen and grab the beer. And as she does, I sit in the smaller love seat. I've left the choice up to her. She's gonna sit close to me or sit in a different chair. And Karen walks in with the beer and she sits with me in the love seat. I can't believe it. Karen likes me. And half an hour later, we've put our beer on these tomato crates that we use as little stands next to the couches. And Karen and I are no longer watching the movie. We are making out on the love seat. I can't believe it. It's the only time in my life, truly, when I have this out-of-body experience. In a moment, I should 100% be in my body. Instead, I sort of float over my body, and I look down at Matthew, Dix, and Karen making out, and I turn to an audience that is never there but should be, and I say, "Do you see what is happening here? I am making out with Karen. This is incredible." And when the movie ends, the kissing ends, and we get ready to send her off on her way, and she says, "When can I see you again?" And I say, "The party on Saturday." And she says, "I have a family thing. How about Sunday?" And I tell her, "I'm going to a Patriots game on Sunday with Benji, but I am fully willing to ditch Benji in place of you." And she says, "Do you like the Patriots?" And I laugh. I tell her, "I love the Patriots. I fell in love with the Patriots when I was sitting on my Pepe's lap when I was a little kid. Before I even understood the game, I'd just sit there and he would shout French at the screen. And I once dated a girl because she once lived on the same street as Patriots quarterback Steve Grogan. Like, totally undateable in every way whatsoever. But her former proximity to a Patriots great made her completely dateable to me for a month. I wept in 86 when they lost to the Bears. And in 96, when they lose to the Packers, I will throw a shoe through the wall of my friend's house, causing his wife to never invite me back again. I love the Patriots. And she's excited. Karen says, "I've never been to a game. I'd love to go." And I say, "Fantastic." And so Sunday rolls around and I wake up, and the first thing I do is I turn on the television to check the weather. And it is 5 degrees with the wind chill. And I know Karen can't go to this game. You cannot bring a rookie. You can't bring someone who doesn't know what they're doing to this horrible place. And it's bad because it's 1992. The Patriots are on their way to a 1-15 season. It's not even a good team to watch. And so on a bad weather day, you don't bring someone you love. And so I call Karen and I say, "It's too cold, it's 5 degrees and there's a wind chill, you can't go." And she says, "No, I'm gonna be fine, I'll dress right." And I say, "You don't understand. I empty my closet onto me. Every single thing I own, I will put on today. And that is how I will go to the game. I will be the Michelin man on my way to the game and I'll still be cold." And she says, "Don't worry, I know how to dress for the cold." When she shows up to the house, it is clear that she does not know how to dress for the cold. She has one pair of jeans on. She's got those brown boots that come up to the knees that look really great, but you know there's nothing between, like there's giant gaps in the boots where the cold air will fall. And she's got a jacket. Like even the word jacket sounds flimsy, like it's just a jacket. And she's got like a little cute hat. It's not gonna work out. And I said, "Karen, you cannot go to this game. Please don't go to this game with me." And she insists, and I can't say no to Karen. So off we go to Foxborough, to Old Foxborough Stadium, which is a concrete shell filled with metal benches and blinding wind and despair. That is all there is in that stadium. And she is shivering before the game has even begun. It is a terrible day to see a football game. And as the game begins, it's a terrible football game being played by a terrible football team. It is 6-0 as we approach halftime. And as the clock ticks down, Karen turns to me and she says, "Thank God this is almost over." She thinks we've reached the end of the game. And so I have to tell Karen, "This is only halftime. We still have another half of the game and a 12-minute intermission." And she says to me, "I can't do it." And I agree. Like, if she stays out here, I really think she may die. But there's another part of me that's thinking, "I told you what to wear. Like, this is on you, woman. This is not my situation." And so I'm looking at the most beautiful girl in every room, and I am looking at truly the worst football team I have ever seen, and I have a decision to make. And so I am wise, and so I choose love. And I tell Karen she can go sit in the car. I can't leave. This stadium seats 80,000 people, and on this day, there are 19,000 people in the stadium. That means 3 out of every 4 seats are empty. My team needs me. Karen says to me, "Really?" And I say, "I can't leave." And so Karen gets up, and as she leaves, I make that mental calculation one final time. The most beautiful girl in every room, the worst football team I've ever seen. And I tell her to please have the car running when I get back. I know that there's a very good chance that car will not be there when I eventually arrive, but I can't leave these guys. And so the game ends. It ends 6-0. The Patriots lose in truly what is the worst football game I have ever seen in person in my life. And when I get back to the car, it's there, and it's running, which is beautiful when you're this cold. And so I climb into the car, and I turn to Karen, and I say, "Bad news, we lost." And Karen doesn't say anything to me for the rest of my life. I drive Karen home, speechless, and I never see Karen again. I get home and I tell my buddies what I have done, and they all want to kill me one at a time. They think I'm crazy. And as I'm getting ready for bed later that night, Benji peeks into my bedroom, and he says to me, "That was the stupidest thing you've ever done, but I respect your decision." And he is right. Because sitting in that stadium looking at Karen and looking at that football team, I knew in my heart, Karen and I were not meant to be together forever. I was not going to marry Karen. But this football team, this football team, I knew they would always be there for me. That they would never leave me, and that every Sunday I could return and we could be together. And that ended up being true. I became a season ticket holder in 2000. I sit in section 331, row 24, seats 5 and 6 every Sunday. And it's not an exaggeration to say that over the last 2 decades, some of the most joyous moments of my life have been spent in that stadium, hugging strange men who I have just met, swearing at referees who I will never know, and cheering on football players who I will never meet and yet somehow love with all of my heart. And I have attended 10 AFC championship games, and I have cheered my team through 6 Super Bowl victories. And as I look back, truly on that day when I say goodbye to Karen, and I think about everything that came after, and everything that that football team has given to me, I think I've made the right decision. Thank you.
So Matthew Dix, if you want a little bit more about Matthew, is an award-winning elementary school teacher. He's an internationally best-selling author. He's also the humor columnist for Seasons magazine, and he's an advice columnist for Slate magazine. This is amazing. Matthew is a 39-time Moth Story Slam champion. 40? Is it 40 now? And a 6-time Moth Grand Slam champion. Who is this guy? He's in the house. He's the founder and artistic director of Speak Up, which is a Hartford-based storytelling organization. And in addition to performing, he's teaching storytelling and communication around the world. He's a wedding DJ, a playwright. He could do your wedding and do stand-up and marry you. He's a minister. Oh, my God, I was just kidding. He's a minister. He's clearly a stand-up comic. He's a life coach. I need your coaching. He loves ice cream cake. That makes you so normal. Golf, tickling his children, very sweet, and staring at his wife and not sleeping. Okay, everybody, Matthew Dix.
If you want to know more about today's storyteller, well, you're in luck. Let's join our host backstage, now in conversation with today's teller.
All right, so this is Matthew Dix here. I'm going to answer some of the questions that I just asked of some of our storytellers. So what is my favorite or least favorite thing about Maine? I guess it's a memory. My wife and I celebrated our 10th anniversary here in Maine in Kennebunkport. And when I arrived in Maine, I knew I had pneumonia. I just knew it because I've had it many times before. And it was a terrible thing to have on your 10th anniversary, but I kept it a secret from my wife. I just took it really easy. And there was one moment when we got back to the hotel after doing something, and I said, you know, do you want to just lay down for an hour or so? And she said to me, I've never seen you relax in my life. This is amazing. I love this new version of you. What she didn't understand was it was the pneumonia version of me that I kept a secret until I got home and then immediately went to the doctor and got on medication. But I loved that vacation. We went kayaking down a river, and I sat at the back of the kayak on purpose because I couldn't catch my breath, so I just splashed my oars in the water and made it sound like I was doing something while she was really doing all the work. But it was an unfortunate but great memory about Maine. So who would I like to share a stage with most in the world? You know, I guess it's my wife. She MCs or hosts most of our shows, all of our shows, really. But there is something wonderful about sharing a stage with the person you love. You know, you're getting on stage and you're going to be vulnerable and you're going to be authentic. And just knowing the person in the world who loves you the most is in your corner is a really wonderful thing. So if I could have anyone, I'd have my wife tonight. She is right now having pizza with my children in a wonderful place and did not have to drive 5 hours through the pouring rain to get here. So she is right now happier than I am. But when I'm on stage, I'll certainly be having a good time. Do I listen to myself after I've told a story is the next question. And yes, I do. I don't actually write my stories out in any way whatsoever. Everything is done orally. Like Monique, actually, I do most of my work in the shower or while driving. Those are the two places where no one bothers me and no one can hear me sounding bad. And so everything is done out loud. And when I'm happy with what I've done, I record it. So I have that's the way I sort of preserve that story. And then I listen to it before I perform. I always record my performance and then listen to it later. So I like to think that every story I'm telling is always under constant revision. Even though I may not tell a story for another 7 years, or there are stories I think I'll never tell again, I still feel like I'm constantly revising that story by listening to each recording and trying to make the next one better. So yes, I listen to myself. I really don't mind listening to myself, although the early versions of a lot of stories, I'm sort of horrified that I stood in front of 300 people and told it in that way because I hear all of the terrible imperfections that I understand now. And the last question was, tell us a nugget about something regarding tonight's story that I'm going to be telling. You know, I guess the nugget I would mention is I've told this story once for my show in Hartford, and it's about an ex-girlfriend or a girl who I was infatuated with and we had a brief tryst. And I have a line in the story that says that
Karen is the most beautiful woman in any room that she enters, which at the time was true until I met my wife. But telling the story that night, as I was saying those words aloud, my wife was sitting right in front of me, I realized that this is not going over that well with the woman I love. And to tell the story well, you have to understand that this girl in the story is like the most desirable woman I have ever met in my life up until the point I meet my wife. But it occurs to me that she has to endure a lot of stories about a lot of my ex-girlfriends and listen to my deep and passionate feelings about women who are other than she. So once I finished telling the story the first time that night, she took the stage, and I have a recording of it. I listened to it on the way to Maine, where she sort of just destroys me for about 4 minutes in front of our audience, talking about all of the terribleness that I am at times. And the girl who I say I never saw again at the end of my story, that's not true, because that night, one of my friends finds her. She's not on Facebook, but they find her on MySpace. And so my wife gets to see a photograph of what she looks like today. I thought she looked pretty good, but my wife did not. I did not tell my wife that I thought she had aged really well, but my wife thought she looked terrible and awful and unworthy of my affection. So.
Soundbites is brought to you by Frontier Studios and made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing Company, Frontier, The Press Hotel, Toad & Co., and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. Special thanks also to GWI and Downey's Pension Services. More information about Soundbites, including how to attend a live storytelling event, can be found online at soundbitesme.org. And of course, you can always hear more stories at mainepublic.org. Thanks for listening.